Hi, everybody. I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
my sobriety is February 5th, 1985. It seems kind of anticlimactic to have me get up and talk after that. They're all crying. My wife's out there. I love you out there waving your hand. That'd make a Baptist boy get up and move around. Girl's got some rhythm. I could have came to the dance last night and showed you while I'm a Baptist. It's genetic, not choice. I got no rhythm at all. I can't do it. I'm trying to see what time it is. Steve out there says he's only got one CD left, so I better get it right. So anyway, certainly that was beautiful. Thank you for doing that. That's neat. I know that. I'm supposed to be the Sunday morning spiritual talk, and I had all the most evil thoughts. It's all that comes out of my head. That is all that comes out of my head. John Scott told me, remember, you know, to make yourself covered, you can remember him in your underwear. Now, all I think about is him in his underwear. And I'm like, oh, my eyes. Oh, my God. And, it's amazing. There's so many people here that I know it's almost like speaking at your home group. And y'all know what it's like to speak at your home group? I mean, you know, everybody, when you go somewhere a long way from home to talk, you can get up and just say whatever you want. No, you can rewrite history all you want to. Nobody can deny it. Oh, yeah, there I was with Bill and Bob and with the man on the bed. And you can say whatever you like. But all these people here, there's some of them that'll stand up and say, liar! they won't let me get away with it. There's too many people that know me here. So I have been trying to say, don't lie, don't lie, don't lie. Don't tell the truth, tell the truth. Golly. And we had Larry, who's like the machine gun figure, just getting it all the way through. You're just hanging on the whole time. And Frank, who's just scary. And he's the kind of guy I like to drink with if he was my friend. Because I would mouth off a lot and then say, yeah, talk to Frank. You don't like it? And John and Cindy always just thrill me to death. And they're two of my favorite people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Vinoy has set the standard for Al-Anons in my life anyway since I began. She met me in my first months of sobriety. And then there's me for Sunday morning. I mean, I wet my pants a few times and went to jail a lot. I mean, you feel so inadequate here. I will never forget, and I hope that this will come out as respect and not. I've been thinking about this all weekend now, and I just think the world of Cleve. He is the first speaker that I remember hearing. I know he's not the first speaker that I heard, but any of y'all that have heard Cleve talk know why he's the first speaker that I remember hearing. His story is so just above and beyond my ability to even dream up. I know it's true because you could not make up a story like that. You just can't. I mean, he's flying over enemy lines. A plane blows apart. He jumps through a hole. Somehow lands and with broken limbs and still conquers the whole town or whatever happens. Comes back to Oklahoma, runs for emperor of Oklahoma and wins. I mean, and I'm telling you, I got here, I'm 20 years old, and I'm thinking, I don't belong here. You know what I mean? I mean, I just can't imagine. I just can't imagine. I've had the honor of meeting John and Cindy's daughter who got sober at 16, right? I mean, and there's some others here that I know, some of the girls here in the Morningstar bunch that are young, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. And don't let anybody tell you you're too young to be an alcoholic. If you are, you are. You can't change it. I know that there was a lot of old farts like me in AA who shook their fist at me and said, you're too young to be an alcoholic, and they would say things like, I spilled more than you ever drank. And I'd think, if you didn't spill so much, maybe you would have got here sooner, Maybe if you'd have tried a little pot. That's another thing they'd give me a lot of heck about, And I don't know. You know, I hear people talk about that's an outside issue. It was always inside of me that stuff was making a effect. So I don't want to pretend that that's just the way it was. And you know, this down in this part of the country, I've been in jail in Ardmore. I did a lot of drinking down in this part of the world, from all the southeast and southern part of Oklahoma. So I never know what's going to come out, you guys. I never know what's going to come out. I'm still the most nervous guy I know when I get up to talk. I never forget. There's a guy here from Phoenix Group that was doing a deal. At the old Big Book Group in Norman, Vinoy was there, I'm sure. And I finally get 2 years, all right? It took me three to get two, but I finally get 2 years, and they had a minimum over there. And I had done everything, worked the steps. I was the token young person in Alcoholics Anonymous for the whole central Oklahoma for a long time. I was like a pet pig, you know. They just paraded me around everywhere. And finally they said, all right, let's let him talk. And you know I want to talk. I always want to be the center of attention until I'm center of attention. Then I don't know what to do with it. It's like, and I go over there to make my pitch. And I get up and I'm Steve, I'm alcoholic, and give him my sobriety date. And then I start sweating and shaking, and nothing would come out. That's it. I mean, nothing. I stuttered and stammered around for about 5 minutes and sat down. I did. I swear to you. I still hold the record for the shortest talk ever gave at the old Big Book Group in Norman. And they come up to me after. The old timers were all so kind and courteous back then, you know, like they're not now, but they were then. And they would come up and say, I'll never forget, Otto walked over to me and he said, boy, you ever worked the steps? Yes. Why don't you talk about them then? And he stomped off. Oh, they were so mad at me. My sponsor just put me in the car on the way home. He didn't have any. That's the first time I ever saw him speechless. He didn't know what to say. He was so, I'd embarrassed him to the point he just couldn't imagine. I mean, it's just, those were the people, those were the heroes, you know. I mean, and Vinoy talks about it every time I'm talking. I always love to hear it, you know, the heroes upon whose shoulders that we stand, the people that have gone on before that cleared this path. The table was already set when I got here. I didn't have to do a thing, just show up, you know? And I'm so grateful. And that's why I tell that story about Cleveland, not in any disrespect. I mean it with the utmost. It changed my life realizing that anybody, any walk of life, anywhere can be alcoholic. These guys that went before me, Jim Shaw, Jack Clater, Cleve, that has been such, you know, even John and Cindy, I've admired them from afar. They know it now, you know, we've become real good friends, but I just watched them. I never talked to them, trust me. I did not talk to them. I was scared to death of them. Now, I would sidle over to them now and then and eavesdrop in on a conversation, you know, and as soon as they found out I was listening or tried to include me in, I'd scurry back off into the corner because I was afraid of them. Jim Shaw scared me to death. He had fingers like two fingers of a normal person. He was, you know, and he's the only man I've ever saw to this day that could handle Vinoy. I was about to tell you, he wasn't scared of her. He was not afraid of her. I admire him still for that. He was. He's a man's man, you know. That's the kind of man I want to be when I grow up. I don't want to be no scared little wimp. You know, but boy, howdy, that's not how it started, you know. I mean, there's a line in our book that says, all men of faith have courage. And I believe that has happened to me. I believe that has happened to me, but that is not from whence I came, I assure you. And I don't ever know how to get this thing kicked off, but I can pretty much stand on a porch where I live today and look down the road a mile and see where I was born. I mean, I was born right there in Shawnee. I've not ventured that far away other than the little stint I did down here touring the county jails among southern Oklahoma for a couple of years. Other than that, I've been right there. My dad was a preacher at the Southern Baptist Church, and my mother played the piano. That don't mean it was Ozzy and Harriet, let me assure you. There's a lot of bent fenders. One of my favorite talkers of all time said, we either become pastors or drunks, one of the two, and my dad tilted it that way. But when you read a Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can see his description in there pretty plain. It's pretty obvious. And there was a lot of crazy stuff, double standards, double life, double stuff that was going on in there that really really was weird, but you know, that none of that is an excuse. None of that is an excuse for the way I turned out. None of it is an excuse for the way I turned out. My dad has 62 years of sobriety. I think he did 63 years of sobriety. My mother has 61 years of sobriety, okay? They never have had a drink in their life. Never. Not a sip. No cooking sherry, no wine, no nothing. They use grape juice at the Baptist church. That wine is not wine, you know. They have never had a drink. And I don't know. I guess that I needed more fun than the average Baptist. I don't know. I was always a weird, weird, weird little kid. I was just strange. I was just strange. I don't know why at 5, 6 years old, I'm sniping other people's cigarettes and learning how to smoke. Now, Baptists don't smoke. Y'all know that, right? We don't smoke, drink, gamble, dance, none of those things, all right? None of that stuff. And I'm learning how to smoke at 5 or 6 years old. It was not easy, let me assure you. And I don't know why that was appealing to me. Nobody in my house smoked. Nope. Why I thought that was cool. I learned how to get high by spraying gold paint in a rainbow bread sack long before I learned how to drink. You know, I don't know why at 7, 8 years old I'm out with a bunch of people, you know, underneath the tree until I conk over and fall out. I don't know why. I quit that right away. I mean, assure you, if you notice around Alcoholics Anonymous, there you never meet an old paint huffer. There ain't none. There's no such animal. They all dead. You either quit that or die. Let me assure you. And so I got over that pretty fast, you know. But I would still, you know, I'm the kind of guy that would pop the top off the tractor and hit the old gas can a time or two just for fun once in a while, you know. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why. I know that I was scared to death. I've been scared to death my whole life. I was scared of the dark. I was scared of big people. I was scared of everything, it seemed like. Scared of my own shadow. I was just scared. And for one reason, I weighed like 72 pounds when I entered high school. You know, I mean, I was just skinny. I've gained like 100 pounds since I got sober. It's amazing. If I make it to 30 years, I weigh 400 pounds. It's amazing. You can really grow in AA. I was always scared. I was always skinny. I was always just weird. I was just always looking for something to do that they told you not to. I don't know why. I mean, if you say don't do it, that's the first thing on my mind. It's like telling me not to think about drinking. You know, it's like, you know, just don't think about elephants. What does everybody think about? Elephant. You know, I mean, that's all you see in your mind. I can't do it. You just tell me not to do something, and it's automatically, I wonder why they don't want you to do that. I bet it's fun. They used to tell me about them bars. They preach about the evils, all the bad stuff that's going on there, nasty. I'll never forget the first time I went to a bar. I thought, they have been lying to me all this time. The girls were wearing short skirts. The band was up there playing music. They were singing and dancing. Everybody was having a good time. I thought, them guys are liars. They don't know what they're talking about. They said you'd go to hell if you lived that way, you know? I thought they meant after you die. I didn't know I was going to go now. You know what I'm saying? I might have paid closer attention. I had no idea I was going to go to hell now during this life, you know, and I didn't. And I pretty soon I found drink, and I wasn't very old. I found it early and started after it as fast as I could, as hard as I could. We lived way out in the country, but there was package stores here and there, and in between feeding and in between we had a farm and ranch. That's what we did for a living. Dad preached at that little church. It was just a part-time gig, in between, I could always find something to drink. I mean, there was always my sponsor tells me, don't even tell this story because it's so corny, but I would ride my tractor on the way to feed the cows. I'd ride my tractor by the package store. There was an old man there that would come put me a couple of quarts. I had a charge account there when I was like 12 or 13 years old. He would put me a couple of quarts up on the tractor because he didn't want to see a kid that was, you know, 4'4", 72 pounds, carrying 2 quarts out of his store at 8 o'clock in the morning. All right. And he would put them 2 quarts up there and I would go on feed the cows. My mother would pick me up and give me a ride to school. Now, something weird happens, you know, and this is as far as I can tell is alcoholism. That not every day did I have to have both quarts, you know. Not every day did I have to drink them before I went in. Not every day. A lot of days it was just enough to know that they were there, Some of the guys talk about that when it says on the outside of the liquor store, wine and spirits, you know, that there's something about a spirit that comes out of that bottle that just will ease into me, knowing that it's out there, knowing that it's in my locker, knowing that it's underneath the seat of my car. If you're a newcomer here this morning, knowing that you got some back at the house just makes you okay. You know, you can tolerate us one more hour because you know in just a little bit you're going to get some relief. You know, and I understand that. It would just, that spirit of that stuff would just ease out and I would know I'm going to be all right after a while. And it would make me be able to go and do like you guys seem to be able to go and do without it. I took to it almost immediately and was a daily drinker as often as I could get my hands on it, at least, you know, living where I was living. And pretty soon, you know, when I got to AA, they asked me if I'd ever tried to stop drinking. I said, no, hey, no, I never tried. Never tried. And that is a lie. That is such a lie. You know, we live in such a delusional world when we're new. I mean, it took me a few months of sobering up and getting my mind back to realize how bad a shape I was even in after I'd been here. But I've been trying to quit drinking since I started drinking. You can't live that kind of lifestyle and be raised in the home I was raised in and drink like I was drinking and not feel guilty about it. And I knew that it was wrong. I knew I shouldn't be doing it. I almost immediately knew that I shouldn't be doing it. And when I was 16, my folks sent me down here to this place just north of here, Falls Creek. Anybody else been to Falls Creek? Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a few little Baptist boys and girls here. I know. And so they sent me down to Falls Creek, and we loaded up as much as we could smuggle in. But about Wednesday, we ran out of booze and dope, and they played Almost Persuaded, and I was. And there I went, down the front, you know. And I know that, I mean, I need to change. And trust me, they've got a very similar program there. I go to church now. If you're Baptist, don't feel like I'm picking on you. I'm a Baptist. I can pick on you because I am one. We can make fun of each other. It's all right. So don't get all sensitive. But I'm telling you, their program was like a three-step program. They didn't have the remaining. I know they got them, but their book is like 1,200 pages. It's a fairly complex deal when you're new, at least. And they start laying out this three-step deal. And I walk down in front, and I want to change. I know I need to change. I know I need to get different. I know I need to get right. But you know what? I approach God then as if I had something to offer. You know what I mean? I mean, I look back all the time trying to figure out why. Why couldn't I get it then? Why? You'd have a different speaker if I could have got it that time. I wouldn't have needed to go through all the hell I went through after that. But I come down there like A-Rod goes to the Yankees, you know? Like, you know, I got something to give. What are you going to give me for it? You know what I mean? That's how I went to God that time. I really think that God, like God needed somebody like me on his team. I was such a special individual, you know, self-centered to the extreme. All I think about is me. And I made the approach to God that way. And I did their little three-step program. I talked to the guy. I admitted I'm drunk. I need saving. I need help. I need something. I came to believe. And I did the third step prayer. And then I launched into what I know now as a fourth and fifth step inventory. Now, they don't have that for the Baptists. That is not that. You just take that straight. You avoid the middleman and go straight to the big guy. You know what I'm saying? And I started launching this out on this youth counselor over there at Falls Creek and telling him some of the things I've been doing. Now, I'm just hitting the high spots, all right? I'm not going into real detail about, like, what I've been doing with the girls in the youth group or anything. I'm just telling him some of the things I've been taking and doing and stealing and some of the stuff. And his eyes roll back in his head. He starts patting his chest going, oh, Lord, oh, Jesus, oh, Lord. Hold on. And that was enough for me. I mean, I shut her down. I didn't tell him anymore. I just shut her down. And immediately what that did was I don't feel forgiven. I try. They tell me I'm forgiven. They tell me I'm forgiven. But I don't feel forgiven until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and work these steps and go out and forgive some of the other people and try to set some of the things right that I've done. I never felt forgiven. I knew that didn't work. And that would be the first time, you know. I mean, they took me back to the church and run me down in that water. brought me back up. I come up out of there and look over in the choir, and one of the girls bends over to pick up her songbook, and I think, oh, Lord, you know, you didn't wash them all out, you know. I knew even then that was wrong, you know. And I just think, okay, preacher, run me back down in there, you know, because I get to sponsor a Baptist preacher these days, and it is so fun, because I just, you know, pretty much I say, okay, boy, sit down, I'll talk, you listen, you know. I mean, you can preach to the rest of them, but you're not preaching to me. He told me one time, he said, the only way baptism is going to do you any good is if they hold you under till the bubbles quit coming up. That's it. Yeah. I just wasn't going to get it, and it was the first of many times I tried. I mean, I should be rusty how I got baptized so many times after that. I tried. But what that created, I made it about 3 days without taking anything. And then somebody come by and said, hey, you want a drink? And I said, sure. And I picked it up and got drunk. And then, you know, the next morning I'm shaking my head and thinking, wow, wait a minute. I wasn't going to do that anymore. I just got this religious experience I had, and it was as real as I'm standing here today. It wasn't phony. I wasn't faking nothing. I really wanted to change. As much as I wanted to change when I came to AA, I wanted to change then. I don't want to live that way anymore. But I got drunk again. I mean, just 3 days after this momentous experience that I have, confrontation with God, and I'm drunk. And I think, boy, well, you can't tell them. You know what I mean? So you hide it, and you pretend it doesn't happen, and you go back, and you listen to the rules again and see if maybe you missed something. A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. You know what I mean? Be sure you got it right. Yep, got it right. Go back to church on Sunday. You know, next Wednesday comes along, somebody comes by and says, you want a drink? And I say, yeah, sure. And I get drunk. I mean, this is happening on a regular routine basis. I will go to church on Wednesday night, and afterward we go down to Pizza Hut to maybe study the Bible and have a little fellowship. And I realize it's $3 pitcher night on Wednesday night. Well, we should have one while we're studying the Bible. And you know, and 9:30, I'm underneath the table, conked out, because I've had 8 pitchers of beer. You know, I don't know. I just, boom, it just happens. I seem to just be struck drunk here and there and everywhere. I'd never meant to. More often than not, I didn't mean to. Now, sometimes, don't get me wrong, something go wrong, screw you guys, I'm going to get drunk. You know, but I felt the same guilt and remorse the next day, whether I meant to do it and got drunk on purpose or whether it accidentally happened. And you know, and I'm 16 years old, and I can't put together 2 weeks of sobriety. The longest stretch I go, I fell in love with this girl's dad's money. And, if I could have got pregnant, you would thank you for having a different speaker tonight. I would own a chain of treatment centers by now. I'm telling you, he was rich. So anyway, I put together 8 weeks of sobriety, going to church every time the doors were open, and not drinking. I mean, not drinking. I don't think about it. I'm just not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I've turned over a new leaf. I'm not going to drink. And I go down there to Tishomingo with some buddies of mine to start college. And this is the day before college is supposed to start, you know. And I go in there and I see a couple of guys that I know, and they say, hey, let's run over into Texas and get some of that Armadillo beer. And I said, no, I have quit that. You know, I've turned over a new leaf. I've got religion. I don't do that anymore. And they looked at me and said, oh, come on. I said, okay. And I mean, I went on a 3-day run of drunk, just crazy. I remember sometime that night pitching my keys to one of the guys that had brought me there and said, you going home, I'm staying right here. And we got it on. I missed the first 2 days of college. You know, I mean, it just happened. Now, I've been sober for 8 weeks. That's the longest stretch I've been able to put together. And boom, I'm just right back like a duck to water. Just take off in it. I don't know how that happens. I don't know anybody else that happens to except us. You know, that's alcoholism. I'm sober. I'm as physically sober then after 8 weeks as I am today after whatever, 20 years. I am physically sober. But it has absolutely no effect on alcoholism. You know that? Physical sobriety has no effect on alcoholism. That is baffling to me. baffling to me. Yeah, it's part of the equation. Yeah, you got, you know, I never knew anybody that worked the steps drunk. You know, I know a few that try. I got some that still call me, want to pontificate about the big book, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, and, yeah, I'll talk to them, but I, you know, I never knew anybody that really applied these principles drunk. Don't get me wrong, but physical sobriety has really no effect on alcoholism. And, you know, I tell you what happened. I was down there in college, and this girl I wanted to marry had other notions, you know. The business that we were in the farm and ranching business, it went completely broke, bankrupt, you know, washed it all away. I am going to church every time the doors are open. I am staying sober while they're looking, you know, and that's about it. And I think to myself, God, why? Why? If this is what I get for trying to be good, you know, these bad series of bad things happening to me. If this is what you get for trying to be good, screw it. Who needs to be good? I don't need to be good. And I made a deal with God. I would never ask you for anything again. Don't ever ask me for anything again. And as far as I can tell, God has never reneged on that deal. He has never asked me for anything again. Now, there are very few pure, real, non-believing atheists in a end-over-end car crash. You know what I'm saying? You will tend to find your religion. You rarely hear somebody scream out, oh, cosmic crystal rock doorknob, when they are going, ka-kong, 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 bounce around inside of an old pickup like a tin can. You know, you will find your God. You will cry out for Him. You know what I'm saying? When you get pulled over by the hypo and you got a half pound of dope underneath the seat of your car, you will find your religion. I made that deal with God, and I swore I'd never go back on it, and I went back on it several times, several times, several times. I'm locked over up in Johnson County Jail. And I got a whole mound of stuff in the trunk of my car, and I remember praying, God, I know you made blind people see. Please make them SOBs blind when they go out there and look at my car. Because if not, I'm going to prison for a long time. And I know it's coming. You know, I mean, I made a decision that day when all that bad stuff happened to me that I'm just going to get drunk and have a good time. And the heck with everything else, you know. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And that was it. I mean, that was really it. You know, I can't pay the price. That's the problem. I am a wimp. You know, I told you that one upon beginning. I'm a scaredy cat. I want to be a gangster drug dealer, you know. The problem is I'm scared of everybody, you know. You can't collect when you're scared of everyone, you know. You just can't. Well, let him go. We'll get him another one. You know, if you threaten me much at the bar, I'll find somewhere else to drink. You know what I'm saying? And you know, the people in my life have not been that way. They were men's men, like these guys I was talking about at the beginning, like Jim and John and Cleve. They were men's men, you know. And I tell you what alcohol does for me. It allows me to be Chicken Little, Cowardly Steve, and be okay with it. You know? I mean, once in a while, it would actually give me some beer muscles. I don't know anybody that did do that. I'd mouth off at the bar every now and then. And I would get the crap beat out of me every now and then, too, just for the heck of it. I mean, they would just mop the floor with me. I remember one big guy, I told him, dynamite comes in small packages. I must have been on something. And he snatched me up, and he said, go off. And then he pounded me into the sand. I never said that again, I promise you. I didn't tell that until I was sober 4 or 5 years. I got the snot beat out of me a bunch. My dad says I have a mockingbird mouth and a hummingbird ass. That is a bad combination. I will mouth off when the most inappropriate time. You know, but, and I had a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. There's times we sit around and tell stories, and I could tell them with a bunch of, I was crazy. I mean, just crazy. I bought a motorcycle one time. Because I'd lost my driver's license, and I've been to jail. Just seemed like every time I turned around, I was back in jail. I bought a motorcycle because I'm not stopping for them anymore. You can outrun them on a motorcycle. I've had this motorcycle about 3 days, and I hear the sirens go off. And I'm riding with a buddy of mine. And I look over at him, and I say, see you later. You going, but I'm not. And I look behind me. It's a KZ-1000, the one motorcycle cop in the whole county. He's about this far off my tail. just pull over and go to jail. You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that would happen to me. I'm the most unluckiest drunk in the whole world. I feel like Charlie Brown, just a black cloud just followed me everywhere I went. It's just always raining. Oh, God, here we go again. You know, and that's the way it seemed. And I know at the time I hated that. But I am so grateful for it now, because I really feel like that's what pressed me in here a lot sooner than it could have been, you know. I do just like it says in the book. I live to drink. I'm just living to drink, that's all. I got kicked out of college for being a dope head, and I go back, and I've been to jail over and over and over and over, and I got involved in this gangster drug deal I was talking about. I wasn't in, you know, even a major or minor player in it, but all my buddies got rounded up in a hotel over in Durant by the OSBI, and I thought it'd be a good time for me to leave town. You know what I'm saying? I could relocate without fear of judgment, you know, just take off. And I loaded up what I had, a little sack and cardboard box in the back of my car, and went back to Shawnee, where I'm going to start over. I mean, I can start over with a clean slate. I got in with a bad bunch of people down here in southern Oklahoma. That has got to be the problem. You're running with these guys, you know, and you got to get away from them. So I go up there, and I'm going to clean up, straighten up, get a job, put myself together. You know, I got a lot of potential. I know that. I told my sponsor that when I got here. He said, "Boy, you know what that means?" And I said, "No." He said, "That means you haven't done nothing yet." And I was like, "Oh, okay." You know, but I go, I know that I got a lot of potential. I just got to get it harnessed and heading in the right direction, you know. And you know the story, same thing. Nothing changes. I fall in the same bunch of guys. I'm living in staying in a trailer with a bunch of drunken bums. And I get a job as a tile setter. That's the one guy I knew that had a construction company that I grew up with, and he gave me a job as a tile setter. This is just to show you the mentality of what you had when I got here, all right? You start out as a tile setter as a mud mixer. That's your main job. You mix the mud. And that is the day one job, all right? That's the first day. That's the first thing you learn. Mix the mud. I've been there about a year, and I am the mud mixer, all right? People have come in, been apprentice tile setters, started their own company. I'm still mixing the mud, because that's all I got left. I'm just drinking to live and living to drink. I go to work so I can have drinking money. I work with a bunch of alcoholics. They don't care if I show up drunk. Every day now, I'm getting to the point where I got to quit drinking, and I know it. You know, I'm coming in and out of blackouts at various stages of talking to people. I mean, I'll never forget one time some buddies came to see me that I hadn't seen in a couple of years. And I don't realize that it's been a couple of years that I've been on this deal. It actually lasted about 3.5 years that I go on this running drunken deal, you know. And it's been a couple of years since any decent people have hung around with me. And these couple of decent guys I knew came to see me. And I come to out of a blackout looking down, and the whole front of my shirt is wet. And I've got a big old snot bubble right here. I remember that. I can still see it. You know, one of them. And I look up, and there's these two friends of mine. And they're just like trying to ease out. You know? And I didn't know how long they'd been there. But evidently, they told me a few years later, I'm just crying, telling them I got to quit drinking, and I can't quit drinking, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and I'm crying and crying. Now, I come to with a snot bubble in my front of my shirt wet from all these tears I'm shedding, and I say, "Hey, let's party." You know, I mean, I don't know that I've been telling them all that. I'm just spilling the beans on myself, you know. I got no idea. This is a good, I mean, I want to quit. And I can't quit. And here's what would happen. I would get up in the morning and head to work for that tile setting job. And I'd say, "Today's the day, bro. I'm gagging trying to just brush my teeth and get somewhere, you know. I just can't take it anymore." And I'd say, "Today's the day. You got to quit drinking. This is it. You got to quit drinking. All right, you're not going to drink anymore. You got it. You know, I'd give myself a good firm talking to. And I'd stop to get a couple bucks worth of gas at the Quickie Mart right down from my house on my way to the shop to get going. And while I'm there, I ice down a 12-pack of beer for some reason. Not that I'm going to drink it. I'm just icing it down, getting ready for the boys at the shop, I guess. I don't know. And on my way to work, I start popping the top on them and chugging them back just like I always do, because I'm so sick I don't think I can work today without having a couple of beers. And pretty soon I look down the floorboard, and there's 7 or 8 dead soldiers laying around down there in the floorboard. And I think, oh, my God, I've gotten drunk again. And I wasn't going to get drunk today, and I start cursing myself and talking to myself. And, you know, by this time, I'm leaving notes to myself. Quit drinking or blow your brains out. You cannot continue to live this way. You just can't do it. Stop. Stop. And then the booze starts rising to your head. And I think, there is no sense in ruining a good buzz by being mad at yourself. You can quit tomorrow. You might as well get good and drunk today because it's already started. You know, there, once you prime the pump, there ain't no stopping. Everybody knows that. I knew that long before I got to AA. And I just go ahead and get drunk, and I try the same thing over again tomorrow, and try the same thing over again tomorrow, and try the same thing over again tomorrow. And, you know, people intervene. That's what happens. That's interventions. I never had one of those official interventions where they came and got you, but the county sheriffs work really well for intervention. I mean, it's amazing. You get out and act a fool enough, they'll lock your ass up. That's the way it goes. And they did one more time. I got a couple of DUIs about 90 days apart, and I've had some more already, and a bunch of other miscellaneous stuff. I mean, to be a cool gangster drug dealer, I'm always getting arrested for, like, shoplifting bread, you know, because I'm starving. I got some turkey and a loaf of bread I'm trying to sneak out the store with. I was not very successful in my ventures, and therefore hungry. And I'm just drunk all the time. I tried being a burglar. I was going to be a burglar. By the time I get drunk enough to get the courage up to break in your house, I'm like, let them keep it. Who cares? You know what I mean? I did a time or two, but I don't have the stomach for it. I'm telling you right now, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I tried everything. I could not do it. I just couldn't do it. And I get this DUI, and I wake up in jail again, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have any idea. I tell you that where I'd gotten to. I woke up in jail. Shawnee's a small town. Everybody knows everybody, and you know what it's like around Oklahoma. I mean, there's a guy in there. There's a guy in our hometown who's homeless, always walking the streets. He's off in his head for some reason or another. I don't know why, but we called him Jesus. He had long flowing hair and his long beard, and looked like the pictures you see of Jesus. You know, his long hair and long beard. And me and Jesus are all snuggled up in the drunk tank that morning. I know how wacky he is, and I'm thinking, what in the world are they doing putting a nice boy like me in here with people like him, you know? And they chain us together and take us upstairs to fingerprint us and take our pictures and charge us whatever we had. I don't even know why I'm there. And they walk by a plate glass window, and me and Jesus look like twin brothers. Oh, my God. I'm looking for me in the mirror, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not really, but I... You know, I realize what people like me are doing with people like him. I am people like him. I've thrown up on myself sometime in the night. I haven't shaved or bathed in God knows how long. I've just been on a run and drunk. And I'm just they take your belt and your shoes away because you know you're going to commit suicide. I'm just crazy, crazy, crazy. And I have no idea what happened. I had all this potential. I had all this potential. What happened? What happened? What happened? You know, and I don't know. I go see a lawyer when I bail myself out that day, and the only reason I got to bail out that day is because I'd just gotten paid when I went in. That's the only reason. There was nobody left that would let me out. Nobody left. And I get out, and I go see this attorney who I still owed money from the last time, so I thought she might see me thinking I was bringing her money. You know, and she says, boy, you're going to prison. There's not much we can do. You're going to go to prison, and we've done about all you can. The judge might go easier on you if you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I've just got out from a second DUI in less than 90 days. I've been drunk and trying to quit drinking for God knows how long. And I look at her and think, that'd be a little overreacting, wouldn't it? I mean, I probably didn't say it out loud. I mean, you know, she had represented me one time before where I showed up for court. I had on a bandana and a pot leaf earring and my freak flag t-shirt, you know, and I come cruising in. And she looks back there and sees me and runs and cuts me off at the pass, you know, pushes me back outside before the judge sees me. I mean, she knows how crazy I am. I'm crazy. And she says, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, thanks for the information. You know, see what you can do. Here's $12, you know, for my defense fund. You know, I'm in trouble. But I tell you, prison scared me. I've been in a lot of jails, and I got comfortable there in a hurry. And I'm afraid I might have got comfortable in prison, too. I don't know. But I was scared to death to go. And so I start scrambling around trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I go to a church where I went to as a teenager. And I go to see the man. And And I don't know why. And by this time, you know, I've been to DUI schools, and I did a little stint in the Southern Oklahoma mental institution for some attitude therapy they were giving me. And I'm sure that I've heard about alcoholism. I'm sure I've heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe. I don't know. All I know is when I go in to see this guy and I'm willing to tell the truth, I say, I'm alcoholic. And he looked me square in the eye and said, are you sure? Are you sure you're alcoholic? Yeah, I cannot quit drinking. No matter what I do, no matter how hard I try, no matter what changes I make, I've tried everything. I can't quit. And he finally was convinced that I was convinced. And he got up and he said, son, we love you and we'll pray for you. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he walked me over to, there's double doors like that, and he pushed me out the door and locked it. And that was the end of the conversation. I mean, I'm telling you. And, you know, in our book, there's lines that says, it felt as if the gates of hell had clanged shut on us, you know. And that's what I felt like. I mean, my own kind won't even take me back. I've gone too far. And I go back to where I was staying and start pacing the floor, trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to do. And my mother finds me. The piano player at the church. Oh, you can imagine my mother. I mean, my mother loves me so much, she would breathe for me if she could. Trust me. She would still cut my meat for me if she was here at the dinner last night. She is qualified to be an Al-Anon. She is not. We have tried to get her to come for years, but she chooses not to get better. So, anyway. Anyway, God bless her. I love her. She's got my kids today. Anyway, she's the greatest mom in the world. But she says, she walks in and she says, we're going to send you to treatment. Now, if I would have had any idea what treatment was, I would have said, well, let me get my swimsuit and my ping pong paddle and I'll be ready to go. You know, let me in on that. I envision treatment as where they would chain me to a wall or a tree or something and hit me with a cattle prod until I swore I wouldn't drink no more. Because that's all. I've tried everything. I mean, it's like, you know, ah, oh, I still want to drink. Hit me again, you know. I mean, I just can't imagine nothing that'll take this away, because that's the problem. It's not that I'm drunk all the time. I want to be drunk all the time, even though I know it's not a good idea. I know I'm not a complete goof. I got a little bit left up there. I don't intend for it to turn out this way. It just all of a sudden it seems like a great idea to have a drink. I don't mean to wreck cars and run through stores and hurt people and get involved in stuff that I just had no idea that ever was even going on in this world. I don't mean to be involved in that kind of stuff. I don't mean to. It's just I take a drink and then it all seems okay. I just wind up in places like that with people like them till I become people like them. And then I am one. You know, it says we seek out lower companions, and pretty soon we're lower companions. You know, they start seeking us out, and that's what happened. And I'm a lower companion, and I don't know what to do. And I tell my mother, because I don't have any idea what treatment, I said, no, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've already heard twice today about AA, and I'm looking in the newspaper, and I find the number for Alcoholics Anonymous. And Mary Alford, God rest her soul, was the inner group she was the intergroup phone number for Alcoholics Anonymous in our area. Mary had been sober a long time, and she was confined to a wheelchair. So the groups in town put a number in the paper, and it was her number. And Mary loved alcoholics and loved AA. And I finally get up the nerve to call Mary, and I start telling her about my friend who has a drinking problem, probably needs to go to a meeting. And you know the routine, you know. 15 minutes into it, I'm, it's me. You know, I'm just bawling. I'm telling you, boys and girls, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what to do. I if I could do it any other way, let me assure you, I would not be here. I wouldn't. I would go somewhere else, but I don't know any other way. I've tried everything to get the idea out of my mind that drinking's going to be all right, that this time I'll control it. This time I can do it. And it won't go away. I want to drink more and I want to breathe. It just seems natural to me. And it won't go away. And I'm telling Mary and I'm crying. And now the problem is I already got a case of beer in the icebox, all right? And so Mary's talking to me, trying to get me to give up my address so she can send somebody over. And I keep saying no. I can't tell you that because I got to finish them off. I'm afraid they might be like the drunk police and come over and take them away from me, you know. And I don't want to do that. And so finally, after talking to me, she gives me the address of the group. They didn't put the address of the group in there. She gives me the address of the group and tells me where to go that night. And I prepare to go to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous by drinking as much as I could possibly hold. I'm telling you, that was in the afternoon, and I'm just pounding them down till 8 o'clock, fast as I can knock them back. I'm getting ready. And I don't know how you get ready to go to AA other than that. I mean, that's how I get ready. I'm going. And I told you what I looked like, all right, that day I got out of jail. I show up at the meeting looking like that after drinking all day long, all right? For some reason, they didn't say, you know, here's 44 questions. You better fill these out before we let you in. No. They just said, sit down right here, boy. And they gave me half a cup of coffee and had two big guys sit on either side of me. You know, I mean, they welcomed me right in. They didn't make me say nothing. They didn't, you know, demand nothing out of me that I admit to anything or anything like that. They just said, sit down. And they start the meeting in the usual way, just like always. I know it was a book study night. They didn't change the format for me because I showed up. They didn't do anything particularly special. Just run their meeting like they always run. And this is the corny, as far as I'm concerned, part of my story. All right, I'm drunker than drunk. And they start talking. And all of a sudden, these people, I think my mother or my lawyer has called down there and told them I was coming. You know what I'm saying? Because they're telling my story. People who I have no more in common with. First of all, they're all old as dirt. You know? They're in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, sure, sure. No wonder you quit drinking. Good Lord, you're about dead. You know, you ought to quit. Straighten up before you go meet your maker, old timer. You know? I don't think that. You know, I didn't say that out loud. Trust me. But, afterward I thought that. But they just start telling my story. I have no idea. I've never heard this kind of language anywhere. Everywhere they've ever caught me and gathered me up, the football coach, the counselor at school, the drug counselor, the DUI school, the principal, the mom, the dad, the preacher, the teacher, the lawyer, the judge, the DA, the cop, everybody, even a lot of them well-intentioned, well-meaning, kind people who loved me and cared a lot about me and wanted me to do better. Always when they talk to me about my drinking. And when you start talking to me about my drinking, the wall goes up and I cannot hear you. Because I know that you don't have a clue what you're talking about. You're trying to take away from me the only thing that makes me able to get up and go around without murdering a bunch of people. You don't understand how crazy I am. This stuff gives me relief from that madness that goes on inside my brain. And I can't take it. I can't take it. And when you start talking to me about my drinking, I don't listen to you. These folks sat around and talked about their drinking. I've never heard anybody do that. Never, not once. Maybe I'd been somewhere where they were, but this is the first time I ever heard it. This cat walked over to me after the meeting. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. They didn't let you pick sponsors back then. You know, you'll hear well-meaning good folks say, well, you find someone you have a lot in common with. Well, you know, here's the deal. I'm half as young as anybody else there. I'm strung out and drunk and a monkey. What am I going to find? You know, who am I going to, who's got anything in common with me? Nobody. I'm a loser. There's two kinds of people in AA. Has-beens, never was-es. I'm the latter. You know, I never was going to amount to nothing. I didn't have time to wait and find out somebody I have something in common with. No, they said, I'm going to be your sponsor. Now, I don't know what sponsor is. I think sponsor like race car driver. You know, NASCAR, they put Marlboro inside your car and give you a lot of money because you're the sponsor. And I just spent everything I had getting out of jail that morning. And I think, that'd be a pretty good deal. I'm short on cash. No, that's not it. That's not it. I found out pretty short after that. That wasn't what he was talking about. I mean, really. I mean, this guy spent the whole evening just telling me his story. Just talked to me. Just told me his story. Just like it says in the book. He paid a 12-step call on me. He told me his story. And I mean, that's... Here's the, as far as I'm concerned, the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. From that day to this day, I've always known where I belong. There's never been any doubt in my mind. Now, I didn't want to come here, and I didn't even sober up right off the bat. But I knew that I belonged here. I knew that you were my kind of people. I knew it so much that I went home that night and woke up a guy. And this is a guy who I drank with since I was a little kid. And a guy that I had saved his life on a few occasions when he called and said he was going to commit suicide. And I showed up with a jug and we drank that out of our system. And I said, Jay, I found the people who understand. And he looked at me like I'd fell and hit my head. You know what I mean? I mean, he blew it off, and he is still out there, still suffering, still going through it, just like I was. But I found the people that understood. That's the deal of Alcoholics Anonymous. You are the people who understand. No one else ever understood me. No one else ever understood me. When we can identify one alcoholic identifying with another, I'll follow you anywhere. You know, don't forget that when we go on 12-step calls. I think especially guys like me who come from strong sponsorship lines with a lot of structure and a lot of discipline, a lot of commitment, a lot of responsibility talk. You know, they always lay it down for you. And I think a lot of times I forget sometimes. I just want to go in and start telling them what to do, you know, get them out of here. Well, come on, yeah, get a job, get a haircut, you know, get a clean clothes. Come on, get out of here. You know, and I forget that first I got to identify with them. We got to identify with them. If we don't identify with them, all that stuff is just going to be like the cop or the lawyer or the judge, anybody else talking to them. They're not going to hear. But once we identify with them, then they can hear. And then I can hear. And my eyes were opened up. My ears were opened up. For some reason, I don't know why. I know we were talking about spiritual experience this morning at the early morning meeting. And that is, as far as I know, the first spiritual experience I had was that night. They told me to go home and pray. And I got down on my knees and prayed, and I went to bed and I went to sleep. And that's the first time I had went to sleep without passing out. And I can't remember when. And I slept peaceful. Now, that was just a little glimpse, all right? God just seems to throw you a bone once in a while, because I did no more deserve that or earn it. I mean, that was pure grace is all that is. Because the next day, the terror and the madness are back, you know. And you know, I'm one of them kind of guys that I surrender while you got me in a headlock, you know. But as soon as you let me go, I'm going to get on. Come on. Bring it on. You know, I think I can fight again, you know. And my sponsor tells a story. It's like the boxer who throws in the towel. You know, we throw the white towel in, and we don't come out of the corner. We're done. We throw in the towel. And then while the referee's not looking, we reach out there and sneak it back over to our corner. And then the rest of our sobriety, we're tearing little strips off that towel and throwing it back out there. You know what I mean? And that's been a lot the way it was for me. I mean, trust me, I surrendered to anything that day. You know, I would have said anything, go anywhere, do anything to get relief from what I was dealing with at the time. I got out of going to prison through some help of the people in AA, and I sobered up finally. You know, a year and a half or so later, and every minute of that, the whole time, I'm hating Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, now I found the people that understand. I know where I belong, but I have not yet joined you. Right? I come here and I attend your meetings and I listen, but I have not joined AA yet. I just come and listen. I sit in the meeting. I almost look like a member, but I'm not a member yet. Because I just come and join, and I hate you. And this guy that was my sponsor, he would drive across town. He'd drive over and pick me up. I would be standing out in the driveway waiting on him to get there at my mother's house, who agreed to let me stay with her if I would not drink and be sober. All right? So I'm at my mother's house. He drives over to pick me up. We get in the car. He lectured me all the way back to the meeting hall. I mean, just rah, 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 like I'm stupid or something, you know, just on and on and on. I told you not to stay with them new girls last night. I told you, I told you, I told you 100 times. You stay away from them, you know. And we go to the meeting, and I say something stupid, and the meeting's over, and he lectures me all the way back home that night about something I said or something I did or whatever, you know. I'm trying to pick a fight with somebody there, you know. I mean, just crazy. I'm crazy. And we get back, and I get out of his car, and I gently throw it like this with two hands. Wham! I slam the door to try to break the window glass out of it, because I hate him. I hate him. And I think I will kill him someday. I will kill him. That's what I'll do. And I mumble and grumble to myself, I'll never go back to those idiots. They're a bunch of morons. I can't believe I've fallen in with these goofs. For God's sake, what's happened to me? And I go to bed and I go to work and I get up, and the next night I'm standing out there in the driveway, and here he pulls up, and I get in the car, and he lectures me all the way down the meeting hall. and I say something stupid, and he leans over, and we drink a pot of coffee and smoke 100 cigarettes, and we drive back, and he lectures me all the way back, and I slam the door and try to break the window glass out, and it's just like, I've gone to hell, you know, I mean, I've just died and gone to hell. It's over, it's over, it's over. I just hate everything about you. I hate everything. And the whole time, against my will, I'm getting better. I mean, that is just, that's amazing. You know, I mean, I don't understand how to this day how it works. If you would have lined up 10 newcomers along the wall and pick out the ones that are going to make it, I wouldn't even be in the top 10 of the 10. I mean, it was just like, chunk him back. He's not ready. They used to tell me that. I love John Scott's story because they were... The night that I sobered up, right, after I've been here for a while and get drunk again, I remember the look that the guys gave me. You know, at our group, you shake everybody's hands when you come in. One of the guys just walked in, and the look that he gave me was just of disgust. It's just like, why don't you just go drink? They're just sick to death of me. Ah, you know, and then finally, at 9 months sobriety, right? And I'm telling you, the desire to drink. I know people get up and talk. I came to my first AA meeting and the desire was lifted, never to drink again. And let me tell you, I am glad for you. And I know that happens. I don't doubt that at all. I know that that happens. I wanted to drink more and I wanted to breathe every day. I've just put it off for 15 minutes at a time. I just put it off. I put it off and I'm crazy and I work in this ranch and, you know, half the time I'm hiding out with a shovel waiting on somebody to come around the corner so I can kill him and dig a hole, bury him. I'm just nutso, 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 and I'm just crazy and I want to drink so bad and I keep putting it off. I work with AA people and they're talking to me all day and, you know, kind of keeping me together. And every night I go to the meeting, every night a little bit, you know, I feel a little better on the way home. Maybe sometimes I get a little relief, but then the next day it just wakes up, you know, self-will wakes up 15 minutes before I do and starts doing push-ups. And as soon as my eyes fly open, it jumps me. Ah! You know? And I want to drink. I want to drink. I want to drink. And I'm putting it off. I put it off. I put it off. I put it off. And then a day came when I don't want to drink. And I'll never forget that. Because everything I ever tried in my whole life, I can't make that idea, no matter how stupid I know it is, I can't make it go away. Nobody's ever been able to wash that out of my mind. And I go all day long without wanting to take a drink. And that is amazing. That, if there's a miracle here, that's the miracle as far as I'm concerned. Because there was no way I could get that to happen. It just wouldn't happen. And pretty soon I go 2 or 3 days in a row without wanting to drink. Pretty soon, you know, I got sober. I was almost a year sober. Coming up a birthday, they make a big deal out of your 1 year birthday at our group. They, you know, presents and a party and invite your folks and everything, you know, and everybody, you know, make a big deal out of it. And one of the guys had given me a suit to wear because I didn't have a coat and tie to wear. And by this time, I'm working on this ranch. I got a little place to stay out there on the ranch, and they give me a ride into town every night for the meeting. And I developed this network of friends through Alcoholics Anonymous, these people that really seem to care about me, like me, care about me, love me, be nice to me every day. I'm well fed. I've gained probably 30, 40 pounds by then. I'm looking pretty good again, you know, and I'm going to the meeting that night, and I think about how much I hate these people, and I realize, wait a minute, all those things run through my mind. I think, why do I hate these people so much, you know? And I joined you. I joined you. I've worked the steps. I've started on some amends by this time, and I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. It was just boom. I just joined you, and I quit fighting you, and I quit struggling with this deal, and I quit asking why. I don't need to know why. I'm just here. I'm here because I belong here. I believe that beyond a shadow of a doubt. This is where I need to be, and I've just joined you. And I've been laughing and scratching and playing and having about as much fun as anybody I know in Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. You know, and that's been a little over 20. Whatever it is, 2 years, coming up on 23 years. I can't believe that. I plan on maybe sticking around till I can run a con job on the judge to get out of going to prison. That's it. And I'm still here. It's amazing to me. It is completely amazing to me. And in that period of time, I mean, my wife is sitting down here on the front row, the prettiest girl here. I love her with all my heart. We're going to be married 14 years next week if we make it. We've got 3 little kids that look just like me. They're the cutest little boogers you ever saw in your life. Yeah. boy and it's fat. They all look like me when they're born. She wrote a deal in my daytimer. Said next, the 20th is our anniversary, and then my daytimer has got a big deal. It says 14 years is the best thing that ever happened to you. And that's a fact. That's a fact. It's amazing to me. She's a member of Al-Anon. We had a 15-year anniversary for Al-Anon last week. There is no way that someone can come from where I come from to where I am tonight. And there's a lot of water under the bridge between here and there. Trust me. Trust me. Things will go wrong. Murphy's Law prevails, you know. Life happens. It continues to happen. It's all right. It's all right. You know, I've been hired and fired and married and divorced one time, and that was, oh, man. Been to start a new group, start another new group. I mean, you know, hey, things just go wrong. It doesn't always work out. The only consistent thing that I've had since I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had a sponsor and I've kept coming back. That's it. Those are the two most important things as far as I'm concerned. We talked about this morning. This program is monkey see, monkey do. Be sure you're following the right monkey. Don't trip yourself up. An open mind does not mean an empty head. All right? Keep an open mind and listen, but don't kid yourself. If you hear some goofball, we'll hear all kind of stuff in AA, I promise you. And some goof comes up and says, God is a doorknob. And I'll go to his house and with my screw gun and steal his God. You know what I'm saying? I mean, think those deals through. Don't just be a lemming, all right? Think those deals through. God will and will reveal himself to you in the way that he will reveal himself to you. The way he has revealed himself to me is through the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. You have given me back to a community. You've given me to a wife. You've given me to a church. I want to tell you, one of the biggest things that's happened to me, and my grandfather was the one guy in my life that was consistent in everything he did. Every area of his life was the same. You know, he didn't live one way here and one way there. He didn't have his church clothes and his work clothes and his, you know, I mean, he was the consistent. He was the same. He's the one man that I admire so much. When I was in my worst, all right, when I was in my worst and I'd have to go home for some reason or another and be around my granddad would always say something like, he was such a good little boy. He wouldn't finish the statement by saying, what the hell happened? You know, but it was implied, all right. And I loved my grandpa. He just took me places and did things with me. Never forget. Grandpa was a deacon at his church for 40 years. Stalwart of the church, you know, helped found one little church out in the country where he was the last one-room schoolhouse teacher in Oklahoma was a little schoolhouse where he taught. I mean, this was just an admirable man in every way. Married to grandma for 60-plus years, you know. I mean, just every way, shape, and form, he was exactly what I wanted to be. I thought I'd done so much damage to my life that I'd never be able to be like my grandpa. 5 or 6 years ago, Kelly and I, we started having kids and we started going back to church and participating and showing up there. And my grandpa was a deacon at his church, right? They asked me to be a deacon at the church. Now, I'm looking around going, oh, wait a minute. I got to tell you boys something, you know? And they didn't care. I've been there long enough by then that they didn't care. They knew most of the stories. I'm pretty open the way I live, trust me. I'm not anonymous. You know, I mean, I'm anonymous in a press raid on film, but everywhere else, I let them know. If I can help, let me help. Please be that way. Carry this thing into everywhere you go, into your work, into your church, into your community. I don't have no Bill W. T-shirt or bumper sticker that says, I'm a friend of Bill. You know, I'm not talking about that. But when someone needs to know, tell them. You know, live in such a way that you're not embarrassed to tell them. Yeah. You can't put them I Love Bill stickers on your shirt and drive like I drive, or on your truck and drive like I drive. You know what I'm saying? You know, live in such a way that you're not embarrassed to be known as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in your community. Pay your bills on time. You know, be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. Do what you say you're going to do. The little things that they taught me in the day one of Alcoholics Anonymous, or tried to teach me, tried to institute in my life. These are the things that have paid off in the long run. These are the things that have paid off. The best thing I can do is stay right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as far as I can tell, the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous is always keeping people ahead of me. There are people that I admire or I respect or I love enough to tell them the truth about me and hang on to them with all I've got. I got a sponsor and he knows everything that, as far as I can tell, about me. He's heard my whole story, withholding nothing. And then I grab some guys behind me and drag them along for the ride. And if I'm doing that, I am right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is rare that a person gets blowed out of the middle. Stay in the middle. Thank you.